You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Back on The Bench here, Lance Zierlein, and being joined by a guy that I really have enjoyed reading his work for a long time. He's done the basketball work and draft work for years over at ESPN on the Insider section, and he's now kind of his own boss at Substack. You know, a lot of journalists have gone over to Substack, and it's kind of you have a little bit more control of your work and monetizing it. And I'm a subscriber, so I definitely encourage other Rocket fans and basketball fans to do the same. But just give me an idea of how that's been for you.
It's been awesome. I mean, you know, I was part of a massive layoff at ESPN in 2017 and with Mark Stein and a number of other people.
Right.
And one of the really frustrating things for me was that they still held my contract. And so, you know, the good news was that I was still getting a paycheck. The bad news was I couldn't do anything for a couple of years. And as I tried to talk to ESPN to let me do stuff and they would wiggle on it, it started to draw me towards, you know, maybe I just need to get back to my roots, which was doing my own thing and having control back over my life. And that's really how it felt. And the other thing that I really loved about the Substack model, and I'm seeing it now, is you start to build an intimate community of draft fans. Anybody that makes a comment on my stuff, I respond. I do live Zoom calls, with our subscribers. So we can all get in a room together and talk. And it really starts to feel like a community starts to build and that I'm just in conversation with, you know, several thousands, of draft fans, and you get an email from me every time there's a post, podcast, you know, everything else. And so I'll tell you, it's so fun now because when you get a group of people that are actually pretty, you know, if someone's going to drop a few dollars a month down, and that's really all it is, you know, if you get a yearly sub, it's like, you know, $5. It's a cup of coffee once a month. But if they're going to drop the money down, they tend to be highly educated. They tend to know a lot about the draft. And so the commentary and the back and forth and the discussion tends to not be hyperbole. It tends to be actually really interesting stuff. And my readers have actually persuaded me already on some things because, man, they really had dug into Zaire Williams in high school and, you know, want to make a counter argument based off of just, you know, being around him in high school and different things like that. I mean, that's the sort of fascinating stuff that you also sort of get in a community like that. And so I really enjoy it. And, you know, it's fun talking to an NFL draft analyst as well, because even though there's definite differences, and frankly, I'm in awe of anybody that does the NFL draft because there's so many players. Look, you know, I have 80 to 100 guys that I have to keep track of.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, you're in like the 500 range, right?
Yeah.
It's something crazy like that. And even in the NBA, it goes a step further to say, of those 80 to 100 guys, really only 20 of them are ever going to do anything in the NBA every draft. I mean, that's the average number out of a draft where you at least get sort of a rotation-type player that has impact is around 20 in the draft. And so it's a different animal, and I am in awe of what you have to do to keep up with an NFL draft that is, what, 7-8 rounds?
You know, this is interesting to me because you are someone who has been at the NBA Combine, which is, you know, taken off over the years, the concept of the Combine. Of course, the NFL Combine is a really big deal. I want to talk to you about the philosophy of NBA teams and general managers in terms of their approach, because you've been around it for a while. What are some of the differences that you see now in terms of the approach of the 2021 draft versus maybe something you would have seen back in 2005, 2006? How is the process different for the NBA draft?
Well, it's gotten a lot more professional. I mean, I was shocked when I first started doing this work in the late 90s, early 2000s, how the NBA had Marty Blake and Associates, which was basically a family-run organization that kind of ran draft camps. The draft analysis was often very shoddy, very anecdotal. You know, there would be international guys drafted that teams hadn't even necessarily seen in person. When I first started going over and scouting internationally, there was only a handful of teams that were acting their scouts over to do that, which I think is really, you know, fascinating. And so there's, it's been interesting over time how that's gotten professional, the role analytics has played. It's been a huge, huge role in NBA front offices right now, with people getting on the Moneyball tradition that was really started in baseball. And that's changed the nature of these front offices. Now front offices have, private investigators, sports psychologists, they're doing intensive background checks. There's no stone that's sort of left unturned anymore in the draft. And so one of the interesting things for me as an analyst is, it used to be that in some ways I could keep par with NBA teams because they were just kind of doing the same thing I was doing, looking at film, going out scouting or whatever. Now teams are literally spending millions and millions of dollars into their draft process. And, so I've had to rely heavier and heavier on sort of talking to NBA teams and really trying to cull information from them because the process has become so elaborate. And so that's one big, big shift for me. I think the other just shift in the NBA has been the shift in just what you look for in a draft prospect. And some of that is just because the league constantly evolves how they play. Analytics have played a big role in that. But, we used to joke, all the time, if you were going back 15 years right now, my guess is that Evan Mobley and Alperen Sengun would be number one and two in this year's draft because they're bigs. And the conventional thinking at the time is that you get a big, the big is who you build your team around. Doesn't matter if another player is more skilled or looks better, whatever. That is the sort of foundational approach. And it has just dramatically shifted. It's shifted towards shooting. It's shifted towards versatile defensive players that can play multiple positions. It's shifted to having multiple ball handlers on the floor, for teams right now. And because of that philosophy shift, it shifts everything that you start to look for and what makes a great draft prospect. And this will change in 3 to 4 years because as teams adapt and they try to find a new way to take advantage of inefficiencies in offenses and defenses, that's going to shift again. So I constantly feel as a draft analyst, I'm retooling what I'm looking for based off of the current state of the NBA and how the NBA is playing.
That's such an interesting conversation because we can go in so many different directions, but it really, those bigs also might have had a little bit more back to the basket game, even though Mobley is a very thin frame player right now. But, to your point, if you go way back in the day, the Portland Trailblazers couldn't have possibly drafted Michael Jordan because that would have been duplication of the two guard spot where there was very clear cut silos of what a one, a two, a three, a four, and a five are. And of course, now you wouldn't think twice the best player gets drafted. I want to transition over to the Rockets and the NBA draft of 2021 and follow up on the point you made because you have Christian Wood. Now, when I think about Mobley and Jalen Green as the two primary candidates at the number two spot, my initial thought is, well, why would you want to get another big with, movement skills? I mean, is there any kind of replication that you're worried about with Mobley and with Christian Wood? I don't know the teams see it that way anymore, but I am interested in your thought on two skilled bigs on the same team. How does that model work for the Rockets if they were to take Evan Mobley?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that you have to think of this high in the draft. And one is that you don't draft for position this high in the draft. Later in the draft, I get it. But this high, you take the best player available because you're trying to build around a star. And as good as Christian Wood is and as much money as the Rockets have paid him, he is not the foundational building block of the Houston Rockets. You're not building a championship team around Christian Wood. And because you're not doing that, I think you just throw that out the window. Just forget that he's even on your roster for a minute and think about a different question, which I think is a legitimate question. Is Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, or Jalen Green going to be the best overall prospect in this draft down the road? Are they going to be the best building block to build a championship contender around? I mean, that's the question that the Rockets need to be thinking about. With that said, I will say that Mobley, to me, is one of the most interesting prospects that I've scouted in a long time. He physically looks like Chris Bosh. He has some movement skills like Chris Bosh and what have you. But he does a couple of things that are so unique. One, he's a shot blocker, which Chris Bosh wasn't. And he's an excellent shot blocker who rarely gets into foul trouble. His foul rate for 40 minutes is the lowest that we've ever seen on a big this high in the draft. It's incredible. He averages about two fouls per 40 minutes. One of the hardest things for bigs to do to stay on the floor in the NBA is they just get in constant foul trouble. And it speaks to a unique level of fluidity and mobility for Evan Mobley. Evan Mobley doesn't run and move well for a seven-footer. He runs and moves well for a guard. And that is something that's just really unique. And then you look at his offensive game. He can take you off the dribble. He can pull up and shoot. He's an excellent passer. He actually, in many ways, statistically, if you sort of look at him, he's a unicorn because he's offensively, he plays like a guard, but he has the defensive abilities of a big man. And so, one, I absolutely think the Rockets could play Mobley and Christian Wood together. Christian Wood at the five, Mobley at the four. I actually think, I'm not in the majority here, but there's definitely scouts who have told me about this. I'm not sure that Evan Mobley isn't a giant three wing, ultimately, in the NBA, because the NBA is becoming more positionless right now. You're seeing teams sort of move away from thinking about traditional positions, and Mobley is one of the few guys that I've ever scouted that I say I think he could legitimately fulfill any of those roles. In fact, I think he may have better success there than he will as a big, as a five, because I don't know that his frame is going to fill out to the point that he doesn't get beaten to hell by Joel Embiid, for example, down in the post.
Chad Ford is with us right now, NBA draft expert. Do you see Evan Mobley as having the aggression level? And when I say aggression, I mean assertiveness offensively and maybe aggression level defensively. First thing that hits my radar is, if his foul level is that low, is he aggressively working his defensive assignments and what he's supposed to be doing? Because, that would be the concern for me. He's slightly built. Is he aggressive enough defensively, and is he assertive enough offensively for you right now, taking into account, obviously, that he's still a very young basketball player?
Right, he is. And, you do what you're asked to do at USC. His defensive numbers are awesome. And so I don't think there's anything else in the defensive numbers that suggests to us that the reason that his foul rate is low is that he wasn't playing defense. Okay. That there's nothing that suggests that. He was an excellent rim protector. He gets steals for a guy his size at, a high rate. I will say this. If I were to raise a concern about Mobley, it would be that he used to be the number one prospect in his high school class. And then he just seemed to level off for a while. And it seemed like his senior year, and even part of his junior year, he just started to coast a little bit. And what scouts saw there was maybe he doesn't have the drive, maybe he doesn't love the game, maybe he isn't as pushed as much. And so there's two arguments there. One is he's a laid-back kid, and sometimes laid-back kids, that's a problem. Like, you want a guy that's really aggressive, and I will tell you, Jalen Green and Cade Cunningham, they're very aggressive. They're killers out there. And that's a legitimate question about him. The other argument, though, was that he was so skilled, and at his size playing high school ball, he was just bored out of his mind. He was so good that there just wasn't a lot of extra stuff for him to do, because you didn't really see that at USC. Why, I don't know that his motor runs as fast as Green or Cade Cunningham. He looked very engaged at USC. He's an extremely highly intelligent player. He doesn't play with the same emotional intensity that those guys do, but I'm a huge Evan Mobley fan. I do not think there's a big gap between him and Cade Cunningham. And I think the way that the league is going right now, Evan Mobley could easily end up having the highest ceiling of any prospect in this draft and be a generational type of prospect like Giannis has been and others, in that just he does freaky things for a player his size.
That's Chad Ford, part one of our interview. High praise for Evan Mobley, who is being discussed as a potential Houston Rocket. Coming up next, Chad will get into Jalen Green. He'll get into Cade Cunningham and why the Rockets may be on the move up to the first pick. And what is the trigger that should have you expecting a Rocket move to pick number one? He'll tell you coming up next right here on part two, the interview with Chad Ford, NBA draft expert.
If you can't get enough of your favorite ESPN 97.5 show, we've got just the thing for you. And it's not f***ing safe for work.
Won't somebody please think of the children?
For all the uncensored interaction, head over to twitch.tv/ESPN975.